Hi, I'm Chad. I'm a Gen X grown-up. I support Gen X grown-up through Patreon, and you can too at patreon.com/GenXGrownUp.
No life, no fun. Don't you know that you're a grown-up?
Gen X Grown-Up is a YouTube channel, website, and audio podcast you're listening to right now. All made for and by people who love exploring media, games, tech, and toys of yesterday and today through the eyes of Gen Xers who refuse to grow up.
Your dinner cannot just be french fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up.
Welcome back, Gen X Grown-Up podcast listeners, to episode 87 of the Gen X Grown-Up podcast. I am John. Joining me, as always, is Mo.
Hey, everybody.
And George is here.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
In this episode, we're going to watch a new documentary about disco-era supergroup, the Bee Gees, test out a new piece of high-tech gear to simplify your home security, and head to Night City for a look at the newly released Cyberpunk 2077. Before we get into any of that, though, we are going to kick the show off with what is my favorite part of the show, and that is fourth listener email. And the fourth listener that wrote in this episode is Tom. It's one of our longtime patrons.
Hey, Tom.
Thanks for writing in. Tom, thanks. Good to hear from you. And he is referencing a couple of backtracks ago, right around Black Friday, we did the gift guide, you'll recall.
Oh,
we
yeah, yeah.
Pick some different products.
Yeah,
and
I'm still
price
waiting
ranges.
On my TV from YouTube.
Well, you're going to keep on waiting,
yeah,
man, because that was in the top tier.
You check every day to make see if it's come, okay?
I'll wait right by the mailbox.
Yeah. That's right. You give us regular updates to let us know what happens with that. Tom wrote in, though, the subject line was awesome gift guide, referring to that backtrack. And here's what he had to say. Hi, guys. I wanted to express my sincere thanks for the gift guide for Geeks backtrack episode and the Kraft Heinz variety game pack recommendation.
Oh, that was yours, John, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. It was. Yeah, it was. It's just a board game thing that Big G Creative sent me. Tom says, my son has autism, which makes it incredibly difficult to find Christmas gifts he'll enjoy. But one thing he clearly loves is food. He's the very cool embodiment of, I put ketchup on my ketchup. I think it's true of a lot of kids, actually. It's true of me. I put ketchup on everything, too. We like to play games together, but they need to be fairly simple for him to understand and quick to play and keep his attention. This three-pack of food-themed games seem to tick all those boxes, and coming with a trusted endorsement from GXG, aw, I have no doubt we'll have fun playing it.
Wow, no pressure.
No, right? Right? In fact, I was so convinced I immediately jumped in the car, headed to my local Target store. It was home, wrapped and under the tree in less than an hour of listening to the podcast. Whoa.
It sounds like us when we went to go get that You Don't Know Jack game for the first time.
It does, right? Like the game told us buy it and we got in the car and went to get it. And that's exactly what Tom did here. Yep. He kind of winds it up by saying, sometimes finding the perfect gift is just as exhilarating as receiving one.
Yeah.
And in this case, I can't wait for my son to open it and enjoy with the family time together. This is what makes me feel great about supporting you guys on Patreon. To me, this tip from your show, along with many others, has been absolutely priceless. Wow. That's...
Oh, man.
Thank you.
I feel so undeserving.
You know, we're doing tomfoolery shenanigans, and then it helps somebody out genuinely, and it's like, what a happy side effect of our own self-created goofiness. That's...
I just like to point out that I disagree with Mo. I am very deserving of that compliment.
I'm going to have to side with George here, Mo. I think we deserve it.
I'm the only one I'm deserving then.
Too bad. Tough. Take it. Oh, that what a heartwarming email. It's great to hear. I hope you'll let us know how your son enjoys the games.
Yeah,
I think
absolutely.
That'd be nice to hear as a follow-up. He wraps it up by saying, thanks to Mike C. for the awesome show suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish everyone in the GXG community a fantastic holiday as well as a happy and healthy new year. Tom.
That's awesome.
We have a community?
Yeah, we do. You've been on Discord.
Nice.
You know we're hanging out.
Yeah,
you've seen the
still.
Comment section of YouTube.
Yeah.
It's almost like a cult now. I'm just wondering when we all start to drink the Kool-Aid.
Okay. Now I got to go to disagree with George. We're not a cult. We're just a community.
No.
See, I can side with, I'm very fickle. I'll side with whoever. Yes, whichever is the least crazy. Thank you, Tom, so much for writing in. A great email. Great to hear that you found a great Christmas gift out of that recommendation guide. If you would like your email featured here on the show, it's easy. Just hit us up at podcast@genxgrownup.com. We read every single one, and most of them make the show just like Tom's. Okay, it's time to dive into the meat of this show right after the break.
Friday, a holiday tradition for 21 years.
I've killed it.
It's time once again for America's favorite Charlie Brown adventure. It's an Emmy award-winning special. It's a Charlie Brown Christmas. Then he's back, the original cool guy. And this time he's going to melt your heart. So chill out with Frosty the Snowman. Share the holiday spirit Friday on CBS.
Over the past few weeks, we've been trying out Factor Meals, and they're meals that come straight to your door. They deliver them to you in the mail. They drop on the front door in this freezer pack. And it's a great way to eat stress-free. And this spring, you can get delicious, ready-to-eat meals. They're fresh, never frozen, chef-crafted, and dietitian-approved. And here's the cool thing, as we've all found out. You throw them in the microwave for 2 minutes, and they're ready to eat and not even requiring cleanup.
And if you can't find something on their menu that you like, then you're just way too picky.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have over 35 options. You know, they have things like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, Vegan, Veggie, and we even tried the vegetarian one, which was really good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just the regular meals, but they've also got all these add-on packs, which I really love. These are things like, you know, breakfast or on-the-go lunches or little snacks, even like beverages that want to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So really, I mean, like they say on their site, what are you waiting for? And they're not kidding. You can get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals by heading over to Factor.
Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals so you can get back to doing what you love this spring.
Are you looking for good gourmet meals? Try the meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus.
Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Simply heat and savor the good stuff.
Customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle.
Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking.
We're celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for lowest carbon footprint meals.
So head to factormeals.com/GenX50 and use code GenX50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code GenX50 at factormeals.com/GenX50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Getting the ball rolling, talking about media that we have been checking out. Of course, it could be comics or movies or TV or film or whatever it may be that we have been enjoying since the last time we spoke. And Mo, I'd like to start with you. What have you been checking out in the world of media?
Yeah, so this is a movie. It's called The Wolf of Snow Hollow. Has anybody heard of this?
Heard of it? Yeah,
so.
I think.
I would say probably not.
I mean, is it like a follow-up to The Wolf of Wall Street or?
No.
No? Different?
No, not unless he kills people with a full moon.
Oh.
This is one of those weird movies where basically my daughter said, hey, have you seen this movie? She told me about this. And I was like, no. She's like, you should watch it. I'm like, is it good? And then she says, you should watch it. I'm like, wait. I'm like, let's take a step back here. She's like, no, it's one of those movies that you just have to see it. And I'm like, okay. So I watched it, and now I'm doing the same thing that she did to me. I'm doing it to you guys. You just have to watch it.
I'm not sure I do at this point.
Really?
I started watching it. I was like, okay, this is kind of an odd movie. And I could not finish it. Like, I had to finish this movie. It kept me engrossed through this whole movie. Although it was weird. You know what movie's a quality movie when the writer, director, and star are the same person?
Well.
Well, it depends on who that writer, director, and star is, really.
You know, you're getting a quality product because they're able to focus on one thing. So it's basically about a small town, and there's a deputy sheriff who's, like, very neurotic. And just every full moon, somebody dies. And of course, they think that's where the whole wolf, Snow Hollow thing, werewolf, of course. It has an interesting twist at the end. It's just like one of these movies, you're like, you watch it, and I'm like, okay, I don't feel bad that I watched the whole thing. I'm not going to say I totally liked it, but I didn't dislike it. I'm going to tell somebody else to watch it.
Misery loves company. Love Mo.
It's not even a misery thing. It's just like,
really,
you know, there's parts of it that are just like so terrible. And I say terrible in the sense that, like, you know, you see a scene where these two people are talking in the living room, and it's a nice, quiet conversation. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, there's a third person in the room. And I'm like, where the hell did this person come from? And then they start joining the conversation like they've always been there. I'm like, there was no third person in this room this entire time.
So is this a recent film or?
Yeah, 2020.
What? Really? Okay. Yep. New film.
It's a comedy horror thriller is how it's kind of touted. And there's definitely some very funny parts to it. And the main character, it's like he's annoying, but you kind of like him at the same time because he's so neurotic.
And is it actually about a werewolf, or can you not tell us? Is that the twist or the tease? Or
it's they say that there's basically it happens during full moon, and sure. So obviously people say wild animal, so you can draw your own conclusions. All right, it's one I actually kind of want to watch again. Maybe
you sure you really? Do? Because this description I'm is not giving me.
I know it's a very difficult movie to pitch here. I'm telling you, because I'm not going to say it's a great movie. It's not, although it did like IMDb gave it like a 6.3 or something like that out of 10, which is not awful.
That's not terrible.
Yeah, it's not terrible.
Is it one of those that's like it's good and it's bad? Not even that bad? Oh, it is. Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of good, but it's not bad, like terrible. Like, it's just bad enough. You're like, wow, it's interesting. And it actually some pretty good acting.
You're working really hard at this. Like, he's really
working
hard.
Yeah. All right. Hold on. All right. George, you and I need a sidebar. So,
okay.
Are you at all convinced that we should watch this movie at this juncture?
Not a damn bit at this point. Are you kidding me? I'm trying to avoid it now.
For every positive Mo throws our way, he backpedals it with, well, every it's not that time. Bad.
I know. I totally understand. I do 100%. If this was like a normal, like we were having this conversation over lunch, I'd be like, look, just watch it. And I would have dropped it.
Like, the only reason I'm considering watching the film at all is to have an opportunity to yell at Mo later for making me watch this damn movie.
That's the only reason I'm thinking about it. The thought that I had was like, if I watch it and it's terrible, I can give him hell about it. That's the only good reason at this juncture.
That would be awesome, actually. If you guys did that, I would sit here and I would just take it and
that'd be enough. You'd be happy.
I'd let it wash all over me. I'd be okay with it.
Right. The Wolf of Snow Hollow.
Where
can you see it? Is it like a Netflix thing or anywhere you?
It's on Prime. Actually, you can watch it on Prime.
Oh, Amazon Prime. Okay. All right. Maybe. Maybe we'll see.
We should have a watch party.
There is a slowdown coming up in the holidays. Maybe I can find time to squeeze in the Wolf of Snow Hollow.
It's not a long movie. Here you go. There's a plus. It's only like an hour. Clear.
So see, that's the first great thing you've said about it. Not too long.
It's an hour 20-minute movie.
Suffering is going to be limited. There you go.
Exactly. If worst case, it'll be over soon. There you go. So on top of that, George, what do you got?
Pull us out of this nosedive, George. What are you looking at?
This is like, you know, like when they had, you know, must watch TV and stuff, and they had the lead-in show into the big show, but the lead-in show really sucked.
It's going to make yours look so good by comparison.
Nobody watched the main show. Damn. Oh, okay, so I've decided to start a new series. You guys know I've been doing the Alphabet Soup on the Game series for all the stuff I bought in the Humble Bundles. Yep. I decided to do a new one, but this time in the realm of entertainment. So I have a Plex server just like each one of you. And of course, through my public domain searches, I've accumulated quite a lot of movies over the years.
Yeah.
And I realized that I have a large amount of movies that I have acquired that I have never watched, and they've just been sitting there on my Plex server. So I went and looked the other day, and after I cleaned out ones that I had grabbed that were movies that I watched a long time ago and stuff, I cleaned all those up and said, yes, Mark played. I ended up with 60 films that I haven't ever watched that are in my Plex server.
I assume you want to watch them, right, since you grabbed them?
Well, that was kind of the point, right? I mean, you know, they're no Wolf of Snow Mountain Creek, whatever the hell that thing is, but...
Wolf of Snow Hollow.
Snow Hollow. Oh, sorry. That's a big difference. But I said, you know, I wanted to watch these movies at one point. I just never got around to it because I got distracted with something else. Maybe my 20th run through The Office or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I can relate. Yeah.
So I said, okay, I'm going to start with all the unplayed movies. I'm going to start at the very first one and work my way through. I'm not going to pick and choose. I'm just going to do like I did with the Alphabet Soup, A through Z. This one, I'm just going to go through top of the list through the bottom of the list. The first movie that is in my list is a movie called 2040 that came out in 2019, oddly enough. So,
okay. I've heard of it, know nothing about it, though.
I'll give you the description from Plex. So it says, a three-year self-described labor of love, 2040 takes the form of a visual letter from the filmmaker to his four-year-old daughter, Velvet, showing her what the year 2040 could look like if we simply embrace the best solutions that exist today.
I want to watch The Wolf of Snow Hollow.
Yeah, of course you do. So This one, it's a documentary style film, but they do a lot of really fun CGI work with it to show you how things go together. And they also provide a lot of information. And what I like about this is anytime we see one of these environmental, you know, documentary style films, there are a lot of doom and gloom mostly.
Of course.
Oh, if we don't do this, we're going to die in 5 years. If we don't do that,
that's exactly what I envisioned when you said, you know, if we don't do whatever. Yeah, I was thinking
if we don't do this, it'll be Road Warrior, you know?
So in the first 10 minutes of this film, he says, I hate those type of documentaries. I wanted to do something positive.
Oh, all right.
So what he's doing is he's showing the technologies that exist today, how they're being used right now, and then he's projecting what it will make the world look like in 2040 that his daughter could live in.
Interesting.
And it's really positive and uplifting. There's no negative stuff about, I mean, every now and then he'll throw a little dig in, like one of the people he's interviewing might say, you know, if we don't keep supporting this mega corporation here and we do this instead, it'll be better for all of us. You know, that's very minimal in the film. Most of it is, here's how this thing is helping this group of people and how we can all use the same thing. Like one of the very first ones he talks about is energy, and he talks about solar cells. And instead of having these giant solar farms that everybody, you know, talks about we need to do, there's people in different countries that are doing what they call microgrids, where they just take a house and have one little solar cell on it and one battery. And then they have this little device that connects all the different houses in that village together to form their own little electrical grid.
Okay.
And so some people use the electricity for a little while, and then other people trade and buy and sell, and the money and everything about it all stays in that community. So it doesn't go off to some big corporation somewhere.
Mm-hmm. I see.
So it's little things like that. And they're talking about, you know, the economics of the situation, how to build up the people who have the least amount into a fair living world and condition. It's a really fun documentary. It's an hour and a half long, almost to the minute. And I think of the environmental documentaries that I've watched over the years, everything from Al Gore up until now, this may be my favorite one.
Okay. Well, the thing that is most interesting to me about it, it sounds like it's not so heavy-handed. It's not so, you said doom and gloom. It's more of a, you know what we could do? You know how it could be if we would just wake up kind of thing? That sounds like a nice take on it, a nice approach. It's different.
Yeah. It's very positive. I like that about this film. And I think the director, and this is, you know, Mo talked about writer, director, actor. That's what this guy is in this film.
But it's a documentary, so that's a little different.
But it's the opposite. And this guy, because he cares so much about this, and he's very open as well, because he's making a film, right? And he's having to go to different places. So, you know, he had to take airplanes and boat rides and everything. And he's like, look, we spent this much in carbon emissions to do this thing, so we offset it by doing this. And we know we hurt the environment here, so we did something here to make up for that.
It's like during the production of the film, he tried to be carbon neutral kind of deal. Gotcha.
And the film was. It was all carbon neutral by the end of it.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I thought it was just a really nice take on those kinds of films. And I don't know, just a positive uplift. I wish I hadn't waited a year to watch it. I'll say that.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, here we are into the holiday season when it's, you know, you'd like some things to not be doom and gloom. That might be something to watch now, because I know I have that in my Plex library too. I remember seeing it and I've never pushed play probably because who knows? There's always something else to watch. That's the problem, right? Something's always coming. Something new is always happening. But well, okay.
Yeah. Well, John, that's it for me. I think yours, though, is something we all decided to get to watch together, right?
It absolutely is, right. So you talked last time. You were actually looking forward last time we got together, talking about this new Bee Gees documentary, How Can I Mend a Broken Heart? It was coming out on HBO Max. I think HBO even reached out to us and said, hey, this reaches your demographic. You guys should let your audience know about this. So your idea, actually, you said, hey, we're all going to watch this because it's definitely right in our wheelhouse. So we had got together on the Discord server and invited a few of our followers and people that chat with us over there to watch it together. And I will say, for my part, I was not a huge Bee Gees fan. In fact, at the head of this podcast, I think I said disco supergroup, the Bee Gees, because I also, that was corrected by this documentary for me, I associated them with pretty much Saturday Night Fever and that falsetto, very high disco lyric-y music. Yeah. Well, so I think we all have something to say about this, but I'll say up front that I learned so much more about the Bee Gees I didn't know. not being a fan. Now, this didn't make me a super fan of the Bee Gees, but it's the documentary is a human story. It's about how these brothers were kind of a, they had a band dad that made them go around and they forced them to be good. Like he was sure they were going to be good. And they kind of had a uptick and then it didn't go so well. And they broke up and got back together. And just the ups and the downs, it's a very human story. And it gave me a new appreciation for who the Bee Gees were as people, not just as this, what I always thought of was a disco band, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. It's like, see, unlike you, I grew up pretty heavy listening to Bee Gees because, you know, I had older brothers that were like,
you've always
serious.
Said your brothers were huge,
yeah,
disco
were serious
guys, right?
The whole disco scene. Yep. So, you know, having Bee Gees and Donna Summer, Sister Sledge, you know, all those groups were definitely music that was played constantly in the house. And like you, though, John, I have to admit, I thought that was the beginning of the career for the Bee Gees, quite honestly. It was that moment, like Saturday Night Fever. And watching this documentary, one, I actually learned that they are actual musicians.
In their own right, right? They're not just a flash in the pan or a one-trick pony.
They actually knew music. They knew how to write music. And it really, the part that kind of drove that home to me is like that part where they started writing music for other people and how many of these other hits I knew that I had no idea that they wrote.
And that was because of the disco backlash. Like people didn't want them anymore. They had the stink of disco on them when everybody was anti-disco. So they're like, well, you know, we're musicians. We want to write.
Yeah. And so they said, oh, we'll do a song with Barbara Streisand and Dolly Parton. And anyway, I'm like, wow, these are all like A-listers that are just doing their music. So I said, there must be something to this. And I really appreciated just like how much you kind of understood that relationship between the brothers. And in a way, it was kind of cool because no matter how bad things went, and they didn't speak to each other for years or whatever, it came back that they were brothers and they figured out a way to resolve it. And I thought that was a cool message.
Now, after we watched this all together, I think we all enjoyed it in one form or another. But George, you had commented that you were very surprised because it was a very different documentary than you expected to see going in.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised by quite a few things. Number one, I expected the documentary to be completely about the album How to Mend a Broken Heart, because the person who asked us to review this documentary, they kind of hinted that that's what it was. It was totally not that at all. That maybe took up 5 minutes at the most of the entire hour and 50 minutes of the documentary.
Right.
The other thing I was surprised with was that the Bee Gees said, you know, during some of their interviews, because I never saw those when I was a kid, you know, who watches musician news interviews or anything when you're 12
years old. No, you see Solid Gold. That's about the only time you see them say anything.
Soul Train. So,
I was surprised that they were trying to distance themselves from the disco movement and that they said, we're not a disco band. And even, you know, now Barry Gibb says that wasn't our thing. We didn't mean to be disco. Listen, I don't care what they say. They were disco. They were
they
the face
that
of disco.
Train. Right,
you know,
yeah.
I'm not buying that try to revisionist history kind of thing. They were absolutely disco. Now, disco, yes, it had its ups and it definitely had its down at the end. I think the thing that I knew people didn't like disco as I was getting into my musical phases growing up, but good Lord, that Chicago White Sox stadium thing where the disc jockey took all the disco albums that people brought in that night and blew them up at the same night they were having a concert out in California. I'm like, that's just some hatred right there.
That's
damn.
Some visceral, like not just hate it. We're going to destroy it publicly. Like, yeah, like, that was, yeah, I never was exposed to that. Other than there was just the backlash. They made a big deal out of, you know, they basically slapped disco on everything and it tarnished disco. Like so many people do, you make a buck off of it. And you're right that the Bee Gees were, they can say we're not a disco band, but that's the horse they rode to stardom. So it's hard to say, well, we're not.
If Chick-fil-A ever came out and said, we're not a chicken restaurant, I'd be like, okay, yeah.
Yes, you are.
You might serve some fries. You're a chicken restaurant. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but okay. I actually disagree with you guys on that point because looking at this documentary, they had a long musical history before disco.
They did, but it wasn't successful
until it hit. They had a couple
of number ones, but
they were,
you can't deny that Saturday Night Fever is their penultimate album.
That's what made them the super group. That's what made them huge.
I don't necessarily see them denying that. They just denied the fact that they don't consider themselves a disco group, which I
What Barry Gibb was saying in that interview is he was saying that's not all we do, which is true, but certainly it's, I mean, they earned the moniker of being a disco
band. He may have felt that that wasn't all they did, but you listen to those earlier songs that they hit number one with, those sound really damn disco-y to me. They may not have been called disco because disco wasn't a big movement at that point in time, but I'm telling you, those songs, their voices, their arrangements have everything to do with what we considered to be disco growing up.
I totally disagree with you on that one. It's
well, I think the early stuff sounded like 60s.
I think you just flat out wrong. The early stuff sounded like 60s stuff. It sounded like pure 60s stuff.
Stop, stop. What we're going to do, we're going to have a disco dance off, and that's going to settle this argument.
Mo wins because I can't dance.
Okay, fair enough.
Because they're early, early on in the documentary, John, I think you even commented that you said, wow, I didn't, their stuff like really 60s.
It was. And some of their stuff sounded like early Beatles. I didn't even mention that in the documentary.
So that's
not true.
Disco. Yeah. I'm sorry. That doesn't sound like disco, and I'm not sure why you think it sounds like disco.
I don't think it sounded like the Beatles, but that's just me.
Okay, yeah, it's music, right? It's all subjective anyway.
It was a good people story. And
yeah, it was.
So I will say I came out of watching this totally surprised by A, how much I liked the documentary, and B, how much more I care about the Bee Gees now than I ever would have. So I would say it did its job for me.
Yeah, I agree.
So this is The Bee Gees, How Can You Mend a Broken Heart? A brand new documentary. You can see it on HBO Max right now. Just came out the other day. I would say definitely recommend. It's probably, I'd give it like a 3.5 tokens for me. I really enjoyed it. And we got to watch it together. I think we should do more of those. I really enjoyed actually watching something like this together. All right, we'll be back right after this break.
Well, Daddy likes it.
But Daddy loves Old Spice.
I love the smell of my daddy.
This Christmas, give your men the clean, masculine scent of Old Spice.
I love the smell of Daddy.
And so does Mommy.
Give him the gift he'll love, Old Spice.
What was it like to be there for historical sports moments and unforgettable performances? To be behind the scenes? On PressBox Access, you'll hear from me, Todd Jones, and other sports writers about their experiences with the greatest athletes, coaches, and sports events of the past half century. We'll share some stories behind the stories, some big, some small, and some we've only told each other. Let us buy you a round on PressBox Access.
All right, so here it is, the last Tekken Toys of 2020, I think, right?
Is it? We
is
got
it?
One
oh,
more.
Yeah,
we got
more.
December 31st.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, we got one right at the bleeding edge, the end of the year.
Okay, I was just trying to get this year over with.
Can we get this over with, please?
Please, can this year be over?
You can't just will it over. You have to wait for the calendar.
That just sucks. All right. In that case, let's just jump into Tekken Toys. Might as well. Second to last. So what do you got for this time, George?
Well, I have something that I don't know how to describe it other than to say it is it's a little bit of an order, something that I bought from an organization, but they also kind of turned it into a care package.
Oh.
So you guys remember SFGE.
Of course.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Southern Fried Gaming Expo.
One of my faves, man.
I would say maybe our favorite convention of the year when we go to it. I mean, really close with a couple of the other ones, but it's a great convention. We love it.
Yeah,
we
right
go there every
there.
Year.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
it's
we all know 2020, we didn't have the convention, obviously.
Right. Yep.
So
yeah.
One of the things that they asked their supporters to do was to buy some of their merchandise to help them stay afloat so that they could have the next convention the next year.
Yep.
So, John, I know you bought some stuff. Mo, I'm not sure if you bought
anything. I absolutely did.
Yeah,
yep.
I figured
got my shirts,
did.
Got my stickers. You bet. Yep. Yeah.
So I ordered a shirt, that one, you know, that's, you know, we're all in this together thing, right?
Uh-huh.
They didn't have it by the time I placed my order. They had run out. So they sent me an email and they said, hey, you know, we can send the stuff that you ordered now and then send your t-shirt later, or we can give you a refund. I said, just keep the money and keep the stuff and send it to me when you get it all. That way you don't have to pay extra shipping or anything. And I'm not worried about it. I just wanted you
guys
to have a little bit
cash. Because you're mainly purchasing it to support them. You don't care when it gets there, really. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So about, I don't know, a month ago, I was looking through my emails and I was like, oh, you know what? I never did hear back from them about anything. Let me just ask them. So I sent him an email. And he said, oh, yeah, no, we just haven't gotten any more shirts in. We didn't get any new orders to do a new t-shirt order to fulfill.
Okay, right.
And I'm like, okay, well, no big deal. Just leave it there. Sometime you'll produce it. No big deal. And he's like, well, what I could do is I could send you the stuff you ordered right now. And then that way you'll at least get that stuff. Because I had ordered like some dice along with a t-shirt.
Sure, right.
I was like, okay, sure. Send me that, you know, the dice. That's fine. Well, he didn't send it. So it was like a month later. And I was like, oh, yeah, I never did get that. So I emailed him again.
Okay,
and he
now,
said,
hold on.
He said, I completely forgot. I've been swamped. I'm so sorry. He's like, let me send it out right now. And I'm going to send you a few other things along with it just as a thank you. And I'm like,
all right, that's nice.
Okay, sure. Why not? So that package did get here. And I was looking through it. And he really sent me quite a few things. That's why I'm calling it a care package. First of all, that emblem that's on the t-shirt that I ordered, he sent me a poster of it. it.
Okay.
Yeah. So not a big poster, but, you know, like an 11 by 17.
Well, now I'm already jealous because I don't have that poster and you got one for nothing. Now, come on.
I got one for nothing.
I know. I should have ordered something they didn't have.
He sent me one of those hologram stickers with the SFGE logo.
Right.
So that's super cool. He sent me my dice that I ordered, so those I paid for, but that was really cool. Then he sent me two, not one, but two enamel pins with the SFGE logo. Two
Holy
different
moly.
Kinds.
Oh, man.
So, you know I love enamel pins, so that's awesome.
Yeah, so that's one for Mo and one for me. That's perfect.
Yeah, that's fair. That would be
fair.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome.
You'll get those right around time I watch that movie.
He's still back on your Wolf of Snow Hollow, Mo.
I know. I thought we were past that. Okay.
No, we're never past that. No. So, apparently, SFGE started with a Kickstarter campaign. And the last item that he put in the tube for me was an arcade game token that they created to give to the backers of that original Kickstarter in 2014. So I have an SFGE token now.
That's the one thing in your care package that I actually do have. I got that in one of my previous orders back then.
They're
great about just doing a little bit of extra. I mean, this is a good example of just why we like SFGE so much.
Yeah.
They always do a little more. They don't have to do.
Yeah, those guys are awesome. I mean, every time we've gone there, you know, whether it's been just as attendees or having a table or whatever, they always treat everybody so well, both at the convention and obviously through these orders. They do everything they can to keep their people loyal and happy. I am certainly loyal and happy, and I hope that other people will hear this podcast and in 2021 will go to this convention in Atlanta, because A, if you like video games, you need to go to this convention.
And if you like board games.
B, if you like pinball machines,
oh yeah,
you need to go to this convention. Mm-hmm. C, if you enjoy geek culture at all, you need to go to this convention. It's one of the best run conventions, especially for the scale. It's a smaller scale convention.
Yeah.
But it's got so much heart and so much care in it. I just can't say enough good things about these guys. So,
well, for a small convention, though, it always feels so full, right? It's not crowded, but it's full. It's rich. There's enough people for everything. The board gaming area, there's plenty of people to play with.
Yeah.
You can find a random person. It's not crowded, but it's for a small one, it's just right for me, man.
To me, it's one of the few conventions I go to that I feel like I get the full experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like a Dragon Con. I saw 20% of it.
I missed 20 things. I saw one thing. This one, I feel like I was able to do everything I wanted to do, had a great time. It's just so much fun.
And
there.
Have time to do it, right? Because you go to those big conventions, you know, and you feel like you don't have time to do the things you want to do. Even if it's 4 or 5 days long, you still never get to all the things you want to do because you're just rushing from point to point. And I don't think you can enjoy them as much. This place, you can sit down, you can take your time, you can relax, you can spend time with people. John, it reminds me an awful lot of Vulcan back in the day when we used to go to the Star Trek
conventions, right? Yeah. Just the right size. It's like that Goldilocks zone, right? It's not too big, it's not too small, and it's got everything you need. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I got for the tech and toy segment. Mo, what do you Oh, yeah, never mind.
Oh, no.
So let's get back to the Wolf of Snow Hollow.
John, what have you got in tech and toys?
I have an upgraded version of something I already had in the world of tech, but it deserves a little bit of a backstory. So everything I love in technology, if it's just for me, I can just get it and use it, and I don't have to worry about anybody else things. But some things I buy, they have to meet a certain criteria of what I call the WAF, the wife acceptance factor.
The seal of approval.
Yeah, if it's going to be integrated throughout our home or our life, it's, you know, remote home automation or anything like that. If my wife likes it, even no matter how much I like it, if she doesn't, I'm going to be miserable with it. So you might remember way back on this show, back in February of 2019, I got a front door deadbolt, a technology-infused deadbolt from Lockley that I installed in the front door. It had thumbprint recognition and that kind of thing. Do you remember when I got that door lock?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely do, because I bought one.
Oh, did you buy one?
You got the same one, really?
Yeah.
Okay. So I have been enjoying it, and I like it. However, over time, I don't know if it's the design of the lock or the age of the technology, it started manifesting problems. And the nature of the problem, first, and I'll tell you how it manifests. The nature of the problem was that sometimes the fingerprint recognition had trouble if your hands were the least bit damp. So, you know, it's raining outside, of course, damp, or you're carrying groceries and, you know, you touch the ice cream or you touch the milk, or if it's you're holding a drink from carryout, there are lots of reasons your finger may not be completely dry. And so you put your thumb on the thing and it doesn't open. How this manifested is that multiple times my wife experienced a scenario where she's standing at the front door with an armful of groceries and crap, pushing this button and it's going and she cannot get in the house.
Yeah, that's not good.
Unless you purposely did something, but yeah.
No, it was not purpose. Believe me. So I was therefore authorized to find, purchase, and install a replacement for this that would satisfy and meet the wife acceptance factor criteria.
Would you say authorized or instructed? Because it sounds more like instructed to me.
It sounds more like told.
Yeah. So you're more right. Yeah, I'll let you go with that. There was an instruction. I had orders. So I went forth on my marching orders and I found a replacement for this deadbolt. Now, as Amazon often is, it's hard to find the actual brand name. Some things just say what they are in the search. But this is by a manufacturer called RD. And I found a new smart lock that utilizes the TT Lock technology. It's kind of like an app and website that you can use for any brand of lock. So let me tell you about this new deadbolt that I have that, by the way, is much more highly accepted by my wife so far in the short amount of time that I've had it installed. So it is a good upgrade. But here's the deal with this. It's $139, so it's not terribly expensive. Here's all the cool stuff that this lock can do. So first of all, it looks great. It's like brushed metal look and it's shiny gloss black. And so how can you unlock the door? Well, fingerprint, absolutely. You can open up your app that's paired with it and push unlock. It can unlock. You can talk to your Google Assistant or your Alexa or whatever and tell it to unlock the lock, and it will do that. It has a little fob that comes with the lock that you can put on your keychain. So if none of those things work, you can just touch the fob to it and do it. And finally, on the front, there's actually a hidden little compartment you can open. If you're a caveman, you want to use an actual key, you can still do that as well on the front. This has all of the trappings you would want. And you can add it into home automation. So you could add it because it can connect with those assistants. You can absolutely go in and say, you know, as part of a routine, we talked about those routines you could do with Google Assistant.
Mm-hmm.
You could add that as part of your morning. You can even set up schedules. You can say, hey, every day at this time of day, lock this door. So you're even more secure. You don't have to worry about those sorts of things, which I thought was pretty incredible. And if your fingers are wet, you can still unlock the door with the fingerprint scanner.
I was going to say, there's one that you've got to make sure works, and that's the wet finger part.
That was the first thing I tried.
So there's two questions I have for this. Since I bought the original lock as well.
Yep.
The one thing is that, so the only thing really extra this has then is the fob, because the other one had the app and all the other stuff too that you could use to unlock it.
I think so. Right. Now, I never had any success connecting it with the assistants myself, but the fob is definitely new. Right, you are.
The fob is new. Now, as far as cooking up to assistant and stuff like that, could somebody yell, home assistant, unlock door from outside and the door would unlock?
That's a really good question, and I don't know if you could do that. I haven't tried. I guess I should check that out. Maybe I should disconnect that if that's true.
I'm just saying, you know, I don't know.
They would be giving themselves away. It's not like they would be sneaking in at that point.
Well, that's true, right. If you're away on vacation or something, and, you know.
Yeah, true.
That's a security concern that I should take under advisement and test.
But besides that, though, the fingerprint, because one thing I do know is that the fingerprint on this one, the one we bought previously, was hit or miss.
Yeah.
Sometimes it worked. It did have, now, one feature it did have was it had that keypad that would switch numbers around, so it wouldn't show like any wear from using the same codes.
And I experienced that my keypad actually dimmed over the life of it, and I couldn't even read the numbers. So that was an additional problem, because there was that fallback. I didn't mention that this one also has an illuminated keypad. If you want to use a code, that's available too.
Mm-hmm.
It's really just an iteration of what I already have. And I looked in kind of what you can do. And it's one of those things where, let's say you're out of town and a neighbor needs to get into your house, but they don't have a key at all. If they'll just download the app and they tell you what their email address is, you can authorize them for a short period of time to use their app to open the door. So you can give someone remote access to your home if you need to, and you can disable it when you need to. And finally, the thing that the other one didn't have that this has, since everything is logged, you can go to the website and you can see every time the lock was unlocked and locked and whose credentials were active when it happened. So if you have a fob, your fob is attached to your wife. You see your wife scan the door at this point, or you gave it to a babysitter. You see when they came in and when they came out using the lock. So you can actually go back in time and look and see when every time the home was accessed. So there's an additional layer of security there. If you have, you know, many people coming in and out and other people using it, you could use this in an industrial area or business area to see who uses their fob and comes in and out.
So one thing I definitely see, I think this one has an advantage then, is that the previous lock only had Bluetooth connection, right? You only connected to your phone. This one sounds like it has Wi-Fi.
There's an extension box you get. It's like a $30 add-on that adds a Wi-Fi connection that then tethers that to the world. But because there's a system, you can talk to the other phones via Wi-Fi, and then when they Bluetooth connect, it works right away. So it's it's like a hybrid. Yeah.
Okay, cool. This is one of these technologies I wish they had when my kids were younger.
I know.
Because I can't tell you how many times, I lost my house key. I'm like, oh, God damn it. It'd be nice to be able to kind of do that and have the tracking. So that's pretty cool. I'll have to take a look at this.
And my thing is just the reason I wanted it in the first place was I'm pretty keyless now. I mean, George, you got a new Dodge vehicle and you just have a key fob now. You don't need to carry around a key all the time.
We should be clear. I'm babysitting a Dodge vehicle until my son gets his driver's license.
Until your son gets it. That's true. Well, your next one will have a key fob, right? But that was the last key I had was a house key. That was the last one that I absolutely had to carry with me. And now I can literally just carry my car's key fob because everything else I have multiple ways to access, and I don't have to carry any keys, which is a really nice add-on. So I don't know if it's something that is for everyone, but man, it's such an extra layer of convenience, the ability to, you know, to have access to your home, to secure access to your home, and to have logs of how people went in and out. I think it's really cool.
Nice.
On the first day of Christmas, I left the Hallmark store
with the stuffed toy they brought me, reindeer.
On the next day, I bought Rhonda, and then I added more.
Now five, do the song before, dance with Rhonda.
Hallmark, thank you.
Three puppy toys, two girls and boys, one more for the treat, and the stuffed toy named Rodney Reindeer.
Give Rodney and Rhonda Reindeer this Christmas. They're only at Hallmark.
You know, a lot can happen in 7 minutes, and luckily, that's how long it takes me to tell a story. My name is Aaron Calafato, and I'm the creator of 7-Minute Stories. I'm proud to partner with Evergreen Podcasts, and I'd like to invite you to join me on this journey. I'm going to take you on some crazy roller coaster rides using my unique extemporaneous storytelling style, and together, we're going to try to make sense of the world, all through the art of storytelling, and all in approximately 7 minutes.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it's time for the Generation X game segment.
And Mo has been playing the Wolf of Snow Hollow.
No, yes. That's not true. I'm still iffy about it, but you should play it.
All right, well, let's go ahead and start with you, Mo. What have you been playing lately?
Oh, sure. Well, actually, I'm going to talk about a game that I played a long time ago. It's called Lost Worlds, and we have a video coming out on it in our Brought to You by Gen X series.
Okay.
I was contacted by the people who created the game and found out that they are doing a re-release of the game. So what
sort of game is this?
I don't know if you guys remember, I talked about Ace of Aces, but it's a similar kind of deal where it's basically medieval fantasy combat, except it's all done through books. So it's kind of like a choose your own adventure kind of thing, except you're fighting somebody else.
Okay. Yeah, you'd mentioned this before briefly, right? You had an interview with the creator, right?
Yep. And got so, it. Yep, okay. And that video is coming shortly too, hopefully. But yeah, so they're doing a re-release of it, and I got to speak with the actual guy who created it, and they're coming out with some new books as well. You know, he's going to do some expansions on it, so I'm super, super excited about it. So it's on their website, which, again, I'll put in the show notes so people can go look at it themselves if they're interested.
So you've been playing it, I'm guessing, a little bit with this re-release coming out. Can you describe a little bit like what the game is like? I know you said it's a tabletop kind of pen and paper game. How do you play?
It's a pen and paper game, so it'd be great for on the road kind of thing. You have a character sheet or card, rather, and it has all the different combat moves you can do. And then by you and your person you're fighting against picking the moves, you turn to pages in this picture book, and it tells you, you can actually see where your opponent is. So it kind of moves. So if your opponent's doing like a block, you turn that page, you'll see your opponent has his shield up and he's blocking.
So you both have this playbook, and the two are coordinated and synchronized. So what you do is visible in the other guy's playbook, right? Yeah, that's very much like that Ace of Aces game.
Yeah, very much so. The only difference is that you have a card now for your stats rather than just needing a book. And then if you hit, you kind of show when you personally see the other person, you know, screaming as you hit them. And, you know, it's pretty fun. And the beauty of it is that you buy a character book, like you buy the skeleton or the man with chainmail or something like that. But every book can fight any other book. So
they're all coordinated that way.
They're all coordinated. So if you buy the dragon, you have the dragon fight the man in chainmail. You have two men in chainmail fight each other. You have, I mean, so every book works with every other book. That was the part that I think is pretty genius about it and what really makes it fun.
You know, you have that kind of coordination, and it almost looks like a low-key magic trick. Like, how did that book know that I was going to do this?
Right.
It's so well coordinated, surprising, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And the rules are really simple. I mean, once you do like the first two moves and you kind of figure it out, then it's almost like it's like nothing. Like, you just don't even think about it anymore. You just do it, and the next thing you know, you're, you know, hopefully destroying a skeleton.
So we've talked about it a few times. I think we're getting to the point where somebody might be starting to get interested. Now they're re-releasing it. What does it cost to get into this game? How expensive are the books? What are they? What are they run?
So, well, back in the day when I got them, they were $5 a piece.
Okay.
So that was 30 years ago.
At least.
At least. So now they are selling the books right now. They have the first 8 books, I think, up there right now. And you can get a set of books for $25. This is 2 books. So that way you can play right away. So two books. $25. Okay. But here's a little added bonus, which is actually going into the video. Because they like me so much, if you put Gen X into the coupon code, you get 25% off.
Oh my goodness. See there, you've just saved money by listening to this podcast.
That's
well done.
Right.
Is that what you've saved? Are you sure?
So I assume you're going to put a link down in the show notes where we can go and check this out.
I'll put a link in the show notes if anyone's interested. It's a analog way of doing what we do today at computers. You know, you think about it.
It is. Yeah.
But
it harkens back to D&D. Yeah. That sounds cool.
Let me tell you, it's probably the best fill in time game ever. Like, oh, we have 10 minutes to kill. Let's play a quick game. Yeah. It's awesome.
Like, leave it on the coffee table to pick up and play once in a while. Okay, got it.
So that's what I got. So I know. So you have something on the far end of the not analog spectrum, right, John?
I have something that's very, very digital. Yes, I do. So more than a year ago, Mo, you went on a tirade, upset about Cyberpunk 2077 going on pre-order.
Oh my God.
And it was more than a year away.
Not many things piss me off. Yeah.
I know. Well, in fact, we'll find that show. Maybe throw a link in the show notes about it. But yeah, you definitely were upset about the fact they were taking pre-orders so early.
Yeah, because they were pre-selling the game over a year before release.
Over a year. Yeah. And then it delayed, of course. It was supposed to be September, but it finally came out December 10th, just the other day. So Cyberpunk 2077, this is the latest giant open world adventure game from Red Project, the people that did Witcher 3, which has been highly regarded and very much enjoyed.
Ton of hype on this sucker.
It's actually based on the pen and paper role-playing game Cyberpunk.
Oh.
So it grew out of that. It has that mythology. Not that I was into that, but with all the peer pressure and the hype around Cyberpunk, I caved and I bought it.
I did too. Don't feel bad.
And I've been playing it for the last few days. Well, you wanted it a year ago. We knew you were going to buy it.
Yeah, I knew I was going to get it. That's true.
So at the moment, I'm only about 4 or 5 hours into the game, but I wanted to talk about it because it's hot right now. A lot of people are probably hearing about it. Mm-hmm. It's in the news. I'm going to give our take on it. So I've played it, and I think you have too, Mo, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm about the same, about 4 or 5 hours
a little
into
bit.
It. Yeah.
Okay, so it's probably new to you, George. So you're probably the odd man out. Is that true?
Yeah, I have not played it yet.
Okay, here's the thing. This is a huge game, and you can tell that from the moment you step into the game. In fact, it's so huge and so complex and so involved. It's an RPG. It's an open world, like Grand Theft Auto as a role-playing game.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like a game that I had maybe 6 months ago, I played for 10 hours and then put it down, and I picked it up again to resume my save because it threw me right in the middle of things. There were mechanics I was supposed to kind of know. They didn't really give me a tutorial of. There were all these statistics you were supposed to flesh out. Now, I just felt like I didn't know what was going on. Now, I will say that when I got into playing the game plays great. It feels good. The guns handle well. You're shooting guys in the face. It has that theme of Deus Ex which is a game that I think we all have enjoyed, the Deus Ex series.
Amazing game.
Yeah, it's
love
set
that
in
game.
That world of augmentations, right? So people are people, but everybody has cybernetic implants because they want to be a little better. It's kind of like a riff on cosmetic surgery. Oh, I want to have, you know, a better nose or whatever. People want to have a better grip on their hands so they get these implants in their palms, or they want to have better eyesight and they change their eyes out. And everybody has them. And the whole conceit of the game is that at some point you find out there is this chip you can put in your brain that makes you immortal and you're seeking it. But the star of the show isn't so much the story. It's, for me so far, it's been the world.
It's amazingly rich, isn't it?
It's so dense.
Oh my God.
There's so much stuff. You can tell where that extra time went, like everything in the world. I'm driving a car. I want to stop and walk into every store. I want to see everything. There's so many people and things on the side of the road and things going on. So I guess what I'm getting to with where I'm at so far, like 4 or 5 hours into Cyberpunk 2077, is I'm enjoying it, but I'm incredibly overwhelmed so far.
Yeah, I totally get that. I am too, actually. It's almost like I wish they spoon-fed it a little bit more to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of work me up to it. Because if you look at the map, you know, just look at the top-down map, there's crap everywhere.
It's littered with stuff.
Everywhere. There's stuff to do everywhere, which I think is awesome because it's nice to see a game that's focused on single player again.
That's the reason I bought it, quite honestly, because it's a single player mission. Yeah.
And the mechanics, again, work amazing. And I love the fact that every mission, like you could go in guns a-blazing, you could sneak around, like that Deus Ex kind of options that you had before. You could hack computers. You could, there's like probably a dozen ways of solving every single encounter. But it's almost like, God, I wish I spent a little bit more time on the hacking. so I understood that better. Or,
explaining how it works.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Or give me a couple of easy missions using this so I could kind of get the feel for it a little bit better.
I think there's so much going on that, so you know, that I'm a completionist. When I collect things, I want all of them. When I do something, I kind of want to get the whole experience. The whole time through the game, I feel like I missed out on something. There's something I should have been seeing or doing because it's so dense and rich that on the one hand, you might say it's going to make it last a long time. But on the other hand, I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to play it enough to see all the things that I'm missing. You know, it maybe it's just a feeling, but I'm not sure.
Yeah. I mean, and the thing is that nothing goes away. So you're not really missing it. You know what I mean? Like emissions, I don't see them like if you don't do it now, you're never going to do it. I think they just hang out until you decide to go do it. Because I know like my backlog of tasks in my, I go to my, look at my things I have I've been told about or can do. I'm like, holy shit, that's a lot.
Yeah. So it's overwhelming. It's a quality game. Yeah, it's absolutely very big and rich. I'm going to explore it more. Your mileage may vary. It's a quality game. Definitely see where all that time and money went. But I'm not going to give it a rating yet. I'm still, it's too early for me to know if it's something I'm really, really going to enjoy. But I mean, I think in many cases, it's already discounted by $10 or so. So it's a good time to get in. Or if not, wait until all the bugs are ironed out and try it out later. But I will keep playing it for sure. All right. So from a giant top tier game, it's time to move on to George, who is working his way toward the end of his games he has not played.
That's right.
Old games from Humble Bundle. Where are we at, George?
Well, we're up to the letter U.
Wow.
And there weren't a lot of games that I had in my list for the letter U. So I only had four or five games to choose from, which, it's to be expected. The letter U, how many games really come out with that letter as they're starting one for their title. Yeah, but I found a game called Under Rail. It looked interesting. So I said, well, let me give it a try. And I'm going to go ahead and read the description from Steam. So it says, Under Rail is an old school turn-based isometric indie role-playing game that focuses on exploration and combat. The game is set in a distant future when the life on the Earth's surface has long since been made impossible, and the remnants of humanity now dwell in the Underrail, a vast system of metro station places. So I think the only thing I can say is that it received very positive reviews, like almost 3,000. It was released in 2015. I think they probably should have waited and released it in 2016 after they had time to make the game work a little bit better. The mechanics of the game, as far as where you move and how you do the combat and moving the camera angle around and stuff like that, it's really awful. It's not good at all.
Oh,
really?
No.
Oh, no. That's terrible.
A total of 15 minutes with this game. The first 10 of it were setting up your character. As you do in any role-playing game situation, you have to set up your character with stats. And, this one is a very in-depth one. You have stats, and then you have abilities, and then you have magical things you can do. And so you build all those up before you start playing. Then the playing part of the game, I probably spent about 5 minutes worth before I just said, no, this sucks. I'm not playing this anymore.
Oh, no.
And I just went back to this war of mine. It was...
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah. This was not a fun experience whatsoever. So I don't know how it got that many positive reviews. Although, now, if you like the Diablo type games, which I never did play a whole lot, maybe this game works well because you understand the mechanics. For me, somebody who didn't play those games that often, I just couldn't get into this one at all. It was, the playability was too big of a barrier for me to want to keep going.
That stinks.
Oh, that's too bad.
It's just the way it is, though. I mean, you got 26 games, eventually you're going to find a bad one. So, but yeah, I mean, like I said, if you're an RPG Diablo type fan, maybe check this game out. It's right now still selling for $14.99.
Huh.
maybe that's a good price for this game. Maybe it's not.
There must be something there if it's still selling for that price, right?
Well, I mean, I don't know how many sales they made. Obviously, I can't see that. But
that's a good point, right?
They still have it listed at $14.99. Mm-hmm. I bought this in the Humble Very Positive bundle for $6.24. There were 11 items in the bundle, so each item cost me 57 cents. So, you know... A couple of quarters at this game to find out that it wasn't that good. It doesn't hurt my feelings too bad. If I had paid $14.99, I'd be really pissed and trying to get a refund.
Mm, yeah. Thank goodness for Steam's refund policy if we did that, right?
Yeah.
Yep. Now, did you say your token rating? Did I miss it?
No, I didn't. So my token rating for this game out of 5 tokens, like I'd give it 2 just because it looked like it had some promise. And maybe if somebody can give me some pointers on it, somebody who's played the game, maybe I would go back and take a look at it again. But I mean, honestly, as soon as I got to the point where nothing seemed to be working in the playing mode, I just uninstalled the game.
Yeah, that's, you know, sometimes a game just isn't for you. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, like I was just talking about Cyberpunk, that like it's a huge game and people are really looking forward to it. But so far it doesn't grab me. So maybe that's not for me. And that's fair. Not everything's for everybody. And that's cool.
Right. You're right, John. Not every game is for everyone. But I think maybe you have a Steam key that might be a good game for some people out there. Is that right?
I do. Right. Yeah. We like to do giveaways sometimes because we have all these Steam keys that we got through Humble Bundle that we haven't used or we have duplicates or whatever. And so we like to offer one up. And so for this episode, we have Octodad Dadliest Catch. Not deadliest, Dadliest Catch. So this is actually the follow-up or expansion to Octodad, which is, it is a really fun little indie game where the concept is, it's kind of very much like a 3D cartoon, like a Pixar-looking cartoon. You are an octopus who is trying to pass himself as a human in this family, as the father of the family. But the way you move, it's like an octopus. All of your tentacles move in weird ways, and it's hard to control your Octodad intentionally. It's supposed to be intentionally difficult. And throughout the game, the goal is you get missions where you have to complete household chores in this house as the father of the house, while not giving away to your family, to your wife or kids, that you are not a human, that you are actually an octopus. And it's a cute, colorful, fun game that I think a lot of people will enjoy if they haven't played it before. And this is the expansion. There was Octodad, and now the Dadliest Catch is an expansion. It adds even more stuff to do and more missions and stuff.
So. Now, do they have to have the original game in order to use this key, or can they use this key without it? Oh, that's good.
Nope. It's its own standalone thing. Yep. Dadliest Catch. It is. So, so if the first person to email us at podcast@genxgrownup.com with, what do you think for a subject line for Octodad? How about just the number 8?
There you go.
Just the number 8. You and I will know why you said 8, and the first person that hits us up will get a copy of that. All right, we have our looking forward coming up right after the break. Stick around.
Only from Atari. Made especially for systems from Atari. The video game that lets you help E.T. get home. Just in time for Christmas. Happy Holidays from Atari.
Hello, and welcome to Novel Conversations, a podcast about the world's greatest stories. I'm your host, Frank Lavallo, and for each episode of Novel Conversations, I talk to 2 readers about 1 book, and together we summarize the story for you. We introduce you to the characters, we tell you what happens to them, and we read from the book along the way. So if you love hearing a good story, you're in the right place. Our 9th season is coming this fall. Tune in to hear from some of the all-time great authors, Charles Dickens, Jules Verne, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and more. Subscribe to Novel Conversations wherever you listen to podcasts.
Before we wind it up, I always like to take a moment here to talk about what we're looking forward to between now and the next time we get together to record the show. And for my part, you know, as you get into the end of the year, releases of TV shows and movies and music really, really slows down. And as I was thinking about that, I'm realizing that's probably what I'm most looking forward to here in the coming weeks, is the slowing down of all the stuff that's been, seems like it's running at top speed all year long. I have some time off of work coming up, and you know, the rapid fire release of those things is going to mean I can go back and watch some stuff that I missed, or I started and stopped, or you know, maybe I'll go back and play some more of the Cyberpunk game, or I'll go watch, you know, 2040, that, you know, whatever those things that I'll get to eventually.
Wolf of Snow Hollow, you know, that's also out there.
Well, yeah, I don't know about that. But just the chance to slow down at the end of the year is like a chance to recharge. And I think I'm really most looking forward to that. George, how about you? What are you looking forward to?
You know, I'm looking forward to a particular day. I'm looking forward to New Year's Eve. The reason why I'm looking forward to New Year's Eve is because fuck 2020. Jesus Christ, I'm tired of this damn year. Holy hell.
God. And you know, I feel the same way, but it's just a number, right? I mean, no. The next day will just be the next day, but I'm tired of the year.
Our generation 666. I'm telling you, this year is the sign of the devil. The whole 2020, I'm done with this thing. Oh my God. Yeah. Actors that I love have died. Coronavirus is going crazy. We got some batshit politics going on here in America, if you're listening to this in another country. I'm telling you, I'm just done with this year. I'm ready to move on to something more positive.
It's just terrible. Yes, civil unrest. It's just everything. I know. And you know, so since you bring that up, you know, I think we should take just a second and reflect on the fact that, remember back to like January, February, before 2020 really reared its ugly head, and how it seemed like everything was going to shut down. There was a question of, would people, podcasters, continue to podcast? Could we even do things remotely? And how much it's made us stretch out of our comfort zone to do things. You know, we never stopped our production of this show or anything over on YouTube, but it certainly has added stress that is not welcome. Get this thing over with. You know what? Christmas, this might be a year that I actually stay up for the ball to drop this year. I want to see 2020 die. Yeah. Almost, maybe as much as you, George. Being an old guy, I go to sleep, but not this year.
Put the year symbol up somewhere and just have Freddy, Jason, and Michael Myers just go and hammer the thing with knives and pitchforks and
just hack it.
Swords done. With knives. I don't care. It's just done with this year. So done with this year.
I'm with you. Yeah, 2020, you can go to hell. We're done with you. Bye-bye.
Yep. It's been a crappy year.
Ain't nothing like the real thing, baby.
This holiday season, serve the very best at any gathering. Serve delicious chicken tenders from Burger King.
Ain't nothing like the real thing.
Chicken tenders are all white meat breast fillets, not formed bits and pieces of chicken like McNuggets. Plus, they're cooked in 100% vegetable oil. So pick up chicken tenders from Burger King this holiday. How could you serve anything less than the best?
Ain't nothing like the real thing.
If there was anything in this show you'd like to learn more about, the show notes which accompany each episode are full of links to click and explore. Catch up on past episodes and get pinged every time a new one's released by subscribing wherever you listen to podcasts. And you know, iTunes reviews help more than you know, so if you haven't yet, please rate and review us in the iTunes app. And if you have a friend who isn't yet listening, why not? Tell them about us, they'll thank you later. You're our fourth listener, and we'd love to read your emails right here on the show, so hit us up at podcast@genxgrownup.com. And finally, Gen X Grown Up is more than just this podcast. Our YouTube channel has hundreds of videos ready for you to enjoy, plus you can find our entire body of work on genxgrownup.com. That's going to just about wrap it up for this edition of the Gen X Grown Up Podcast. Before we leave, you know, we'd like to take just a second here at the end of our show to express our thanks, especially at the end of this terrible year, to all of those wonderful patrons who support us financially over on Patreon. They literally put a couple of bucks in the bucket every single month to help keep the lights on and support what we do here on the podcast, over on YouTube and on the website. So I want to thank each and every one of you. Tony, Levi, Jason, Thomas, Stew Monkey, Greg L, Blasteter, Stash It, Ben, Matt Lee, Slow Mo, Arlem, Adam, Dan, Marcus, Agile, Mike C, Shelby, Steens, Chewbacca, T2, Chad, Sean, Greg Z, Chet, Travis, Dana, David, Butterspider, Jonathan H, Mark, and Davis.
Woohoo!
It's not one breath, but I made it through. Thank you.
You're still conscious. That's good.
I'll take it. Thanks for everything that you do. It really helps motivate us. It really puts fuel in the tank. If you would like to join these amazing folks, George, would you let the fine fourth listeners know how they can get that done?
Absolutely. I'll give it a big shot. Here we go. GenXGrownUp.com/Patreon. You go over to the free place right there. You create yourself a free account. Then you go over to the not free place and you give us a dollar. That means you love us. We love you. You give us $2. That means we love each other doubly as much. $3 gets you into all that behind the scenes footage. $5 gets you into the Gen X Grown Up swag. And you can name your price from that point forward. We even have a $25 Patreon Muse level, which buys you special access to us to help us decide what type of content we're going to be doing coming up, give us ideas and suggestions. Not that we don't listen to the ideas and suggestions of the rest of Patreons, but these people actually work with us in depth on helping us to create the videos and giving us pointers on what things we should or should not be doing in those. So it's a huge
big thing that we love from our patrons. Every single time you guys send us a dollar or $2 or 50 cents or $3, whatever it is, it's just one more thing that always adds fuel to our gas tank.
It sure does. Yep. Well said. Thanks so much. We hope you will consider that, especially here at the end of the year. If you've enjoyed what we've done this past year throughout the stupid pandemic, it would be great to hear from you. We will be back in 2 weeks with another episode, but next week is our backtrack. We pick a single topic and dig in deep. Mo, would you tell the fourth listeners what's coming next week?
Oh, sure. I don't know about you guys, but I think nothing got me more into the Christmas spirit growing up is when the TV shows are having their Christmas specials. On our next backtrack, we're going to talk about some of our favorites that we remember back from those days, because that's through appointment TV. You knew you're gonna watch this on Christmas, so they had it pretty much set then.
Sounds good. You won't want to miss that one. Until then, I am John. George, thank you so much for being here.
Yes, sir.
Mo, you know I appreciate you.
Always fun, man.
And fourth listener, it's you, though, we appreciate most of all, and we will talk to you next time. Bye bye.
See you guys.
Take care, everybody.
Gen X Grown Up is a member of the Evergreen Podcast family. Learn more at evergreenpodcasts.com. No more washing shows till sunrise. Unacceptable for grown-ups. Your dinner cannot just be french fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up. Cool. All right. Looking forward. So are these in the right order? What are you going to say about New Year's Eve? I was going to just talk about how as we get into the holidays and vacations and stuff, things slow down and that's nice. Are you talking about just getting the fuck out of 2020? Or
basically, yeah.
Yeah.
That's all I was going to do.
Okay. Yeah, they're in the right order then. I like it.
We'll be at one more show.
We do.
We do. It's on New Year's Eve. And that's why I'm looking forward to it.
I'm Bruce Martin, host of Pit Pass Indy. Each week, I go behind the scenes of the NTT IndyCar Series and introduce our listeners to the biggest stars of IndyCar, which features the Indianapolis 500 as its cornerstone event. The men and women that compete in IndyCar may be the bravest athletes in all of sport, as danger lurks around every corner. They are able to look danger in the eye without flinching. That is why the NTT IndyCar Series features the best racing on the planet. Join me every week as we talk to the stars of IndyCar, including the legends of the Indianapolis 500, on Pit Pass Indy from Evergreen Podcast.